This is the story of a nobody by Paul T. Pera, part 2. I chose not to go into the Salesian High School Seminary. I moved on to Sacred Heart High, a Catholic high school taught by the Christian Brothers. It was a tough decision since I felt I let Father Larry and the nuns down. Instead, he invited some peers and I to get room and board in exchange for dishwashing and kitchen cleanup at a summer camp in the mountains. It was a larger task than any of us anticipated. Commercial equipment, 2 meals for over 120 children and guests. Father Larry was under much pressure, and our cleaning was not up to the task. I was expected to get these 14-year-old peers to work harder, faster, and better. Another priest asked me to clean and treat the ankle of a quarter horse while he was gone. With some tethering instruction, he put the reins in my hands and left for 2 days. The horse balked, peers rebelled, all challenged my leadership. Father Larry wants us to do a better job getting the dishes cleaner, I said. You Father Larry's kiss ass? If he wants these dishes cleaner, he can do them himself, he said angrily. Hey, our camp is free. Let's shape up, I snapped. You don't like it? I'll give you the first punch. I'm not working any harder, he said. He stood there defiantly, waiting. There was a large wooded drop-off behind him. My impulse was to throw the first blow. I doused the urge. Maybe it's a temptation, I regretted. I was thinking too much. Impulses were taught out of me from 8 years of obedience training under the tutelage of the nuns. In slowed time, I had stage fright, paralyzed, a replay of a previous face-off when I got a black eye. This lack of sureness made me weak in the knees. The shame of backing down was a bigger punch to my insides. I turned around and returned to my cot, a smaller boy. I didn't hate him as much as I hated the fear that was bigger than me. Damn. 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 These camp duties overwhelmed me. I incurred disapproval from both priests and my peers. I had an anxiety attack. Cowardice, the demon of disapproval, an avenging angel, cast me out of the Garden of Innocence. I developed a heart murmur, took the bus home for more disapproval from my mother. The camp closed early due to a dysentery outbreak. Father Larry's hair turned gray overnight, and these events augured badly for the start of high school. Backing down from the fight branded me a coward, the most disapproving of behaviors in the eyes of my father. My immediate importance and leadership with my special circle of friends was destroyed, I thought. But the most pernicious act awaited, molestation, perpetrated at the hands of the training supervisor of youth counselors. He used the pretext of teaching me clerical duties and typing. It was a cunning, yet assaultive act. He preyed on my vulnerability, as he was in a place of power and trust. Ritualized hazing in the boys' club during lower school included pulling a boy's pants down and exposing their underwear, and a pink belly consisting of a group pinning the kid down, flipping up his shirt, spanking their belly until it turned pink. This counselor was usually the instigator. Innocent on the surface, yes, though it didn't pass the smell test for homoerotic dominance and training for future shame. I blamed myself for this assault. Internalizing the shame becomes its own logic. Otherwise, the Boys Club was a highly supportive place of pre-college and academic excellence that enjoyed a 30-year tradition, beginning with self-taught mentors who went on to become successful attorneys or political leaders, like Joe Aliuto. The youth counselors enjoyed special status. As elite students, we were rewarded with tickets to the opera, ballet, symphony, and musicals. If I passively permitted the infraction of letting him play with my penis to continue, would probably be payment for additional favored treatment. I couldn't go along with this sellout. These events caused me to withdraw socially from the Boys Club, my only major outlet for social interaction. The disappointment with Father Larry, the collapse during the face-off, the peers' disapproval, the Boys Club assault. Caused and went on for me to become a loser in a very short summer. Not an overture of hope for the sibling-like competition that lay ahead, which required confidence, focus, and an intact ego. Past successes did not offer solace in the present. My self-consciousness worsened while traveling on the two Muni buses to Sacred Heart. Added to my stumbling transition, seniors would ridicule freshmen with put-downs like, "Hey, Cherry! Hey, you fairy!" I fixated on my appearance and what I wore to school, believing that I may appear to be effeminate. My mother also had a fixation about her looks, and most photos, if any, had her face scratched out. Avoiding eye contact in the school cafeteria and on buses, I had a cold sweat entering crowded rooms where seated people could view me as a guilty, shameful lowlife deserving their scorn. My parents were confounded by the sudden changes of personality that happened transitioning from grammar school. My general mood became an inversion to further isolation, silence, invisibility. Grades, motivation, sleep were deeply impacted. Other events unfolded amidst this personal turmoil. My father had the first of hospital stays for what then were known as nervous breakdowns. There was a custom in other Italian families too, to classify information and not inform children of events deemed private. These 2.5 years of high school were a retreat from social interaction. It became exile in my own skin, hiding out, beginning to identify with the periphery, The Angry and Artistic Misfits. My parents wanted to know what was wrong. My perseveration modeled my father's indulgent preoccupation with his own baneful history. He no longer had a monopoly on angst or depression. In my junior year, he had an extended hospital stay, and that long summer, my mother and I rarely communicated. My father's return from the hospital was preceded by my mother having a nose operation to improve the feature she never was content having. The week before he returned and during her recovery, both her eyes and cheekbones were black and blue. She resembled the boxer Carmen Basilio after one of his welterweight fights. She could not sleep, as breathing through the rebroken cartilage became impossible. On Sunday, 10/11/59, Madeline asked her brother to drive her to Sausalito. He was an obliging brother. My father anxiously wanted to go too. For me, the commotion was confusing and annoying. When questioned, she said, "I'll be back, Cookie." In 1.5 hours, my father returned alone. I asked my father where she was at. He was quiet at first. He said, "She's not returning." This is where things take on the unreality of shock and denial. "Oh," I said, "she'll be back." "No, she won't," he said. "What do you mean?" I asked. "She's not coming back," he said. "Why not?" I asked. "She jumped off the bridge," he said. He went on to explain the lead-up and the how. I went into myself. I was angry. I did not want to talk to him any further. Our society's gloating on the prurient interests of others' tragic events unfurled. Reporters from the 2 San Francisco newspapers arrived. They wanted a story. "It's public record, Mr. Para." I encouraged my father to be strong and refuse details. He caved in. I was disgusted. The story ran on the headline as another young man also committed suicide from the bridge that day. The following day was Columbus Day, an Italian festival in North Beach, a parade usually with a dignitary, a Hollywood star, floats, followed by a carnival and a bazaar. For us, this was a blurry rush for a funeral, a wake, and rosary. Father Larry was very kind to say a mass for Mom, with me serving as an altar boy. The Catholic Church condemns the act and the person who, out of their own desperation and despair, takes their life. They refuse free funeral rites, burial, and God's blessing. My grandmother died 1 month later. I did not know why this kind, gentle person had been sent to Napa State Hospital for 4 months. More mental illness? I don't know for sure. In that dark October, the reminders of which returned for many years, the innocence of youth dissolved. "You are going to have to grow up quicker," my father remarked. old secrets about her came out as further insult. I asked my high school teacher how to handle these. His reply was, "The good is oft interred in their bones." Mark Anthony's eulogy was not tremendously comforting at that time. The truth from this quote I did internalize for newer occasions. A friend wrote a poem about arriving at a church during a spiritual crisis at 4:30 a.m. He knocked on the closed oaken doors during a spiritual crisis and doubt. In his poem, he said, "Is God locked in or is God locked out?" Too many details emerged to convey in this chapter. 50 years later, I've discovered love letters. A girlfriend of my father's wrote to him prior to my mother's suicide. The popular and current diagnosis, PTSD, probably fits from the molest in my freshman year through the morbid losses of the junior year. I mercifully failed a number of classes during that junior year, and Father Larry arranged for me to go to a Salesian boarding school to make up my grades. After leaving home at 16, I never went back home again. From that time, I became an observer of others and how fate, the universe, luck, providence, nature, nurture, or God's will influence people's lives or outcomes. I re-entered my senior year back at Sacred Heart after boarding school, after all these baptisms of fire. Catholics believe we all have a cross to bear. This added rationality to catastrophe. Catholicism gave me a structure. These events added to compassion for others' sufferings, even though I was not able to deal with the impact of my own for two or more decades. I graduated successfully from Sacred Heart High School, a feat in itself. Humorously, I like the part of the Odyssey where Ulysses and his men are stuck in Polyphemus' cave. The one-eyed Cyclops asks Ulysses, "Who are you?" Ulysses, ever quick on his feet, replies, "No one. Nobody." Cyclops deduces, if he's a nobody, he must be a god. Faulty reasoning? Myopic? I don't know. But he stayed away. He stayed 1 foot away from a despairing destiny. This is the end of A Story of a Nobody by Paul T. Pera. And that's the conclusion.